Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 554. I'm joined by Tim Key. He's one of my favourite humans. I find Tim absolutely hilarious. I love talking to him. I've had him on the podcast previously. I've listened to him on pretty much every podcast he's ever been on. If you've heard Tim on podcasts before and you're a fan, then this is the episode for you, because we don't go over any of his go-to stories. Not his go-to, the go-to stories that podcasters will bring up to him. We take it in a little different direction. But yeah, I think I tweeted this. During lockdown, I had a good think of who I think are the three funniest people in England. And I'm just realising as I say this, I didn't put Stuart Lee in there, which I probably should have. But the list I came up with, consistently the people that make me laugh the most, was Bob Mortimer, Lou Sanders, and Tim Key. I just find all three hilarious. I could hear them talk for hours. I have heard them talk for hours. Tim, during lockdown, speaking of lockdown, wrote two books. He used Thought as a Wife and Here We Go Round the Mulberry Book. They're collections of poems and conversations from outside and from inside. And they're fantastic. And as a real tribute to how much I adore them, I'm going to make my return to spoken word right now. I've not done any spoken word in years, probably 7 years. No, I did the live version of the Distraction Pieces album, didn't I? So probably a couple of years. But I'm going to return now and I'm going to read one of my favourites. I've just flicked through and grabbed one that was a favourite from one of the two books, because I recommend them both. So Buddy Peace, if you want to put some kind of nice chilled piano music under this, you're welcome to, but you know, you don't have to. This one's called Vacancy. I set up formal interviews. Household sat before me, balloting for my services. They wanted me, these folk. They wanted me in their bubbles. Some had put together PowerPoint presentations. Others bought me gifts, leather jackets, exotic perfumes, taxidermy. There was often desperation coming from the other side of the trestle table. Desperation for my signature. There we go. Short and sweet, and not delivered to any level of the calibre that Tim would have delivered it to. But I thought it might be fun to have a Scroobius Pip version of a Tim Key piece. Anyway, this is an amazing episode. I think you're all going to love it. Tim's brilliant. I recommend both the books. We also talk a little No More Jockeys. We got a bit of an origin story that I didn't know. So No More Jockeys, if you've not watched it, is the best thing on YouTube. Start at the beginning, if I were you. It's a hell of a ride. In fact, as I record this, it's a rainy day that's cancelled my plans. And I was just about to watch something on Prime. But now I'm thinking I might restart No More Jockeys from the beginning, because that feels like a great rainy day treat. As ever, we're brought to you by SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com. You can get umbrellas over there and sunglasses, all designed by me and perfect for a British summer. You can also head over to patreon.com/ScroobiusPip or catch me on twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipio. I'm loving being on Twitch. I've been made a partner. I'm doing loads of crazy things. The main games I'm playing over there at the moment are a gas station simulator where I'm running a petrol station. That's literally what I'm doing. I'm sitting on Twitch and I'm running a petrol station. And I'm also doing Saturday morning wrestling. I've created a character called Bernard Down, who is 5 foot of fire. I'd love you all to meet him. You can watch them all on the view on demand, completely free, on my Twitch page. So yeah, if you get the Twitch app or go to the website, look me up. You can watch anything there for free, and you can catch all my live streams. Anyway, let's stop rambling on. This is episode 554. In fact, if this is your first time tuning in, previous guests include Tim Key. They also include Alex Horn. I mentioned Stuart Lee earlier. I mentioned Lou Sanders earlier. They've both been on. I've had loads of guests. I don't need to list them, do I? Richard Herring comes up in conversation here. I've had James Acaster on, I've had Ed Gamble on, and I've had Ed Gamble and James Acaster on getting drunk with me and two of my mates on one of the lockdown drunk casts. I tell you what, if we do another Zoom lockdown drunk cast, another Zoom drunk cast, I should get a Tim Key on. Maybe Alex and Mark. But yeah, had loads of good people. Anyway, this is episode 454 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the wonderful Tim Key.
I've pressed record.
Well, so have I, mate.
This is fantastic. So I can close the lid of my laptop that I'm furious with.
You can angrily close your laptop lid.
I'm furious with it.
I mean, I can tell.
Yeah, well, I am. Now, should I be able to hear myself as well? Not really.
No, you shouldn't be able to hear yourself. That's
okay.
That would be a negative. Well, we've started, obviously, classic podcast manner. I'm here today with Mr. Tim Key. How are you, mate, other than all the technical stress?
No, good, actually. Thanks for asking. I mean, I hope that doesn't cloud at least the first sort of 10, 15 minutes of our chat.
I'm sure it won't. You've had a nightmare from what I've heard.
What, career-wise?
Our original plan was I'll get you on air and I'll talk you through all the technical stuff. You couldn't even get on air for 10 minutes, so...
No, and I actually factored everything in. I've been at this for about 35 minutes now.
I mean, that's stressful. Let's move on from it. I don't want you to be in a stressful place. How's the rest of your day been going before the stress came in? How was it?
Stressful.
Oh, man.
I'm trying to fill out a form because I need to go to Mallorca.
Oh, and those forms aren't easy to do, mate.
They're not easy to do, Scroob. I don't know. So let me just try and think of something that's been stress-free today. I had a grapefruit.
Yeah. I mean, they can come with stress sometimes, can't they? As long as your grapefruit consumption is stress-free, that's a blessing at least.
Do you ever partake in a grapefruit?
I'm not a grapefruit guy, no. I'm not big on fruit in general. I like my veg. I've grown to like my veg. Not big on the fruit. I tend to get my fruit needs from, like, juices and shots because I just don't get into the real deal.
Hmm. Well, I like a grapefruit. You know, I'd probably have, I would say, a grapefruit every week. I mean, I don't eke it out across the week, but
to make it last a bite each morning.
Yeah. No, it makes me feel good to have a grapefruit. There's something healthy about it, and they're so kind of. I don't know whether you've maybe written them off too early, but I suppose you're all fruit, aren't you?
Yeah,
but they're quite a kind of voluptuous fruit, the grapefruit.
How do you feel about, and basically, you've got, I want to talk to you about your two lockdown books. I've got them right here.
Okay.
They're beauties, and we will get into that. The Books of Social Restriction.
Mm-hmm.
He used Thought as a Wife, and Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush. I want to talk about No More Jockeys, the game of social restriction. I want to talk about Witchfinder, which has got very little to do with social restriction, I'd imagine.
Hmm.
But before we get into that, I thought we'd spend 30 to 60 minutes doing a quick rundown of every podcast you've ever been on. Does that sound good to you?
I'd be happy to do that, yep. I assumed we'd start with this.
I jumped in quite quickly there because I've been almost offended at the amount of times on podcasts that you bring up running and people act as if they're surprised that you're into running. There's been at least two or three... Which is very rude. I think you seem like the running type.
Well, it's not inconceivable, is it?
No, it's not. It came to mind because you said, you know, a grapefruit makes you feel healthy and it's nice to feel a bit healthy. And I'd imagine, you know, a run, a bit of physical movement will make you feel a bit nice and healthy.
I find that on stage sometimes where, you know, I sometimes say that I've done something and I just look across at this crowd of people going, are you sure you've done that? And the thing that I've said isn't like I've lifted an Atlas ball or something like that. It's that I've done a 5K or something, and people are like, really? I shouldn't have thought so. Yeah, you. As if I'm a sort of, you know, a sort of 90-year-old Spike Milligan figure telling them that I've just done a 5K.
I wonder what is it about you that doesn't make people think of running? I guess it's the poetry and comedy and stuff. You know.
Well, it's got to be either poetry, comedy, or just my sort of shape, I'm starting to think. But there's nothing wrong with my shape.
I genuinely don't think there's anything wrong with your shape. There's people I would be honest with. If they told me they were into running, I'd say, well, tell your shape. Your shape isn't aware, but...
Maybe it's time you mentioned a couple of those by name.
Well, actually I've got one. I've got a friend, Stuart Whiffen, who runs a wonderful podcast. He's done marathons, and it shocks me. And it's not because he's terribly out of shape. It's because he's similar to me. I'm long. Yeah. Running does not agree with me. It does my knees in. It makes me feel terrible. He's one of us big long lads that I'd instantly say, oh, you've done a marathon, really? And it wouldn't be an insult at his age or his weight, anything like that, you know.
Is he exactly the same shape as you? Because I've met someone recently who's the same shape as me.
Oh, really? Who was the same shape as you?
Alan Mustafa. From People Just Do Nothing, SEPA.
Yes.
And we did a job together, and we were in Italy. We went to the swimming baths, and we took our clothes off. And he's like in a Shakespearean play where they meet their twin.
Yeah.
SEPA just looked at me and went, huh, same shape.
I love it. I love it. It's like that Spider-Man meme of two Spider-Men pointing at each other.
You
and Alan in your keks, just pointing at each other's matching bodies.
We couldn't believe it. Yeah, we could barely concentrate on our swim.
What a wonderful place to start on our podcast, unless it's the Chatting Shit podcast with Sipa and Hugo.
I did do that. Yeah, that was in lockdown.
You caught me off guard there because I didn't know you'd worked together, and you were so familiar. But for some reason, you and Sipa aren't people I would have expected to cross paths. I think I know he doesn't come from stand up and things like that. So it was a wonderful surprise. But you worked on a job together.
We did a job. Yeah, we did a romantic comedy in Rome about 3 years ago.
I love it.
We hit it off. He's a good person to do a job with. He does his research so you don't have to. So immediately, you're going around town having the best pizza. He's a foodie. He's culinary.
Yeah.
He hunts the places down so you don't have to.
He's a good person to hit it off with. The first time I had him on my podcast, moments after that, we're sending each other voice notes.
Yeah.
We're recommending TV shows to each other. And it seems everyone I know that's met him has done exactly the same, has really hit it off. He's a lovable guy.
Oh, he's fantastic. Very funny.
Weirdly, that wasn't on my list of podcasts that we're going to go through and analyse, though. Have you got any that you'd like to focus on?
Let's strike that off. Are you talking about ones that I particularly enjoyed, for example?
Just appeared on. Don't care about your enjoyment. Well, should we start with Off Menu? That's a big hitter, isn't it? Off Menu.
Hated doing that.
Did you hate that?
Well, no, I didn't hate it, but the problem is I don't really like those two guys.
Yeah. They're very unlikable, actually.
They are.
They're kind of the anti-Seepers.
They really are. And totally, totally different shape from me.
Could not be further from your shape.
I really enjoyed doing that one. Have you done it?
Yes, I was the first ever guest. I was the first ever.
That's fantastic. Well, I'll listen to that then.
I kicked it all off. Well, they were a mess. They didn't know what they were doing. The format was loose. You came on at the right time, mate. They knew what they were doing by then.
Oh, they were the archetypal well-oiled machine when I went on there. They're businessmen.
Yeah,
they're going to work. It's like you're meeting these two people that they've run this place for the last 30 years.
Absolutely,
it's it is absolutely fantastic. You're in safe hands with those two. Believe me.
Do you remember your choices?
I remember everything I've said on all of these podcasts. Well, don't worry about that.
It's a good job I've made some notes then.
Yeah. what do you want to ask me?
I want to know. I mean, we'll work through. Did you go for sparkling or still water?
Sparkling. Next.
Do you remember how it was presented to you?
Presented to me in a water wheel.
A water wheel. This is amazing. Obviously, I mean, I don't need to ask Poppadoms or bread because of Shall I Be Mother. That was obviously a takeaway moment. You're not going to forget that, right?
I'm not going to forget that. Often people get in touch with me on Twitter and say, Shall I Be Mother? And are sending me pictures of them smashing Poppadoms and stuff like that. And I'll be honest, I don't know quite how to react. So I just I look at these things and think, well, fantastic, and then move on.
it's what the like button was made for, isn't it? I've got no response. I'll give that a like.
It's pretty good, some of these. And also, it's based on a complete fabrication.
Yep.
Where those two men, I think it's James Acaster and Ed Gamble.
Yep, I believe so.
They've created this idea that I say, "Shall I be mother?" and smash poppadoms. And I totally am willing to accept that I've smashed the odd stack of poppadoms here and there, but not with the clarion call.
Yeah, it's become you've got an unchosen catchphrase there now, which...
I'd happily accept, you know, my catchphrases if they're chanted back at me, but that's just not one of my catchphrases.
It is now. and what was your starter? Do you remember your starter?
Starter would have been...
It's a goodie.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Now then. What would my starter have been? I suppose the best way of thinking about that is, what is my favourite starter?
Yeah, that's a classic.
Christ, can I come back to the starter?
Yep,
oh,
you
my
can
God.
Come back to the starter.
Oh, got it. Yeah, baked camembert.
Baked camembert, classic. And your main?
Oh, my main is a chicken charcuterie.
Of course it is. I've looked this up because you spoke about it so highly. I've never had one.
Fantastic. Really nice. Have you had one since you looked it up? Or are you...
None of my locals provide it.
Ah, that's the problem. But do you feel like you might be on the verge of your first one?
100%. As soon as I get the chance, and this is an interesting one, actually, because I had my first curry in my 20s.
Yeah.
I was at least in my 20s before my first curry. I'm a very mild curry man.
Yeah.
So I don't stray too much, but I'm willing to stray and I'm willing to not enjoy it.
Yeah. I think that's the important... It's the important thing with a lot of the stuff in Indian restaurants is it's finding a balance, isn't it, between having some stuff, especially if there's quite a lot of people. I often have curry with Alex Horn, and he's got this mad technique in curry houses where he just goes for one that he thinks he'll definitely like.
it's a technique I'm familiar with, I'm afraid.
People do that, and then I'm sort of looking through the menu... And there's these various adjectives that I shouldn't really be drawn towards, but they're things like, you know, spicy or horrific or
sharp.
This could be a problem. It's sharp, yeah. Citric. And I'm just like, yeah, fine. I've never really had one that's got like a sort of whole, parsnip in it. Let's give it a whirl. And then they come and then me and Horn are looking at each other and there's this kind of, you know, good, the bad and the ugly sort of standoff where... I just want to go into his with him. He's like, no, I've got this for a reason. But the reason is he just wants to have a nice dinner.
Yeah, he doesn't want the risk. He doesn't want the chance.
Well, I think, you know, whereabouts are you based these days, Scroob?
I'm in Essex.
Well, you're not a million miles away from London, are you? So maybe there's a charcuterie in your not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I might have to go to the Indian that you mention on the Moon Under the Water podcast. We'll get to that. We're a live sitar player.
This is fantastic.
Your side.
So my side was a kind of... People haven't really got to the bottom of this, but there's been a lot of poking around with people trying to help me out because I didn't know what it was. But it's a sort of a kind of... an artichoke?
Yeah.
A Jerusalem artichoke, I think, which has been either deep fried or baked or something's happened to it. Cooked, certainly.
Yeah.
And I remember having it in a square in Rome, on a different Rome trip, and just sort of pulling off the fronds and eating it and then having a glass of Italian beer, I suppose, like a sort of Peroni or something.
You know, you suggested a beer Moretti, but I'll take Peroni and an Italian cigarette, of course.
Yeah, I had an Italian cigarette, Vogue, I think it was actually in the end.
I've realised I've skipped something. I made a note that my phone auto corrected poppadoms to Pip Adonis. If that's
Pip Adonis,
yeah,
that's very interesting because I'm working at the moment. Oh, well, I'm working with a Pip Adonis at the moment.
You're working with a Pip Adonis at the moment?
Well, I think I am. I think it's the closest I could say to working with a Pip Adonis. As in, I'm currently... I've got a small part in Great Expectations, and the chap who plays Pip is very good-looking.
Very much an Adonis.
Yeah, so I think that's the closest I'll ever get to working with a Pip Adonis.
I love it. I'm very excited for that. Your drink was...
Wow-wee! I don't know my drink. Wow-wee!
You'll probably have one on the 25th, I'd imagine.
Oh, as simple as that. It's a kingfisher.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
It's a kingfisher. Of course it is.
And we'll round off with your dessert. Come on, let's have it.
My dessert was a banoffee pie that I eat around.
Yeah.
I eat around the cream.
100%. I've always had issue with banoffee. I think mm-hmm. banoffee opened the door for Brangelina, for Jedward.
For don't like that.
All the future. What's that called?
Is it called a portmanteau? It's sort of that
portmanteau,
sort of thing.
That's
isn't it?
Yeah. Can't stand it.
Yeah. You don't like that?
No.
Is there one, do you think I'll be able to think of one which you do like?
I think you'd be hard pushed.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a shame. And also, I can't think of one, I don't think.
No.
Oh, a champagne's.
No, not having it. Not having it in the slightest. The other note I made was if Horn Should Fall was another, you know, a highlight. So this is, as I said, this is a podcast that's simply a recap of other podcasts.
Yeah,
you've been on. Where do you want to go next? We've got Taskmaster. We've got Moon Under the Water. We've got a lot.
Well, I enjoyed both of those.
I mean, we've got Walking the Dog with Emily Dean. We're going everywhere, mate.
I think I haven't listened to that one back.
Do you remember the name of the dog?
Her dog?
Yeah.
Flippin' hell. She's going to be furious. Is it Carl?
Nope.
It's a small dog.
Yeah.
Speck? I'm trying to think of a small... What is that dog called? What does it begin with?
Oh.
Is it Ray? Raymond,
there we go. Yeah. It's Raymond. He weighs about 6 pounds. Doesn't like water. I don't know if you remember these specific details.
I don't remember any of these details. I can't remember what I was doing with Emily Dean. It was just before I did something. I know that's quite a vague thing to say on your podcast.
It is. You walked around Hampstead Heath. You talked quite a bit about Carol and Bill, the pirate and the schoolmaster.
Wow, yeah. Saw them last week.
Touched upon Bridget and Alan, but mainly Carol and Bill.
Yeah.
How are they?
They came and saw my latest stage show, and so they haven't seen me live for about 4 years, something like that, way before the pandemic. They were great, but I mean, as always, my mum was, she made some comments about the colourful language. I mean, I knew that it was more colourful than usual. Sometimes it can go that way. When you know your parents are in there.
I was going to say, did you know that before they came, or when they're in the crowd, you realise, oh, this is colourful?
As we were going along, I was thinking, the problem is there's some colourful language in the content of the show, in the poems and things.
Right, yeah.
So I realised in the first 15 minutes that there might be a problem here, because I'd called someone a cunt a few times. And I realised as we went along that if I improvise and say that word, then I leave myself nowhere to go, because I've got a lot that I have to say.
You've got scripted.
There's a lot still in there. The scripted ones must stay. And I remember as I was reading one poem out, I could see it coming up and just thinking, I need to get rid of that. I need to dodge around that. And so I think I might have managed to change one or two, but it's difficult in the heat of battle, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't want it to affect the show as such.
So basically the conversation I had with my parents afterwards, I'd been having for about the last 30 minutes of my show in my head anyway, so I sort of knew exactly what I had to say when we were talking about it.
It's absolutely fine, really. I remember I've had conversations with my dad where he's felt that some of the language in my music or whatever else is a bit colourful.
Yeah.
But then I've also had conversations with him going, nah, what are you talking about? I'm fine with a bit of that, aren't I? I don't mind.
Yeah.
It's very confusing, both sides.
What's quite funny is, I just sort of became aware, it creeps up on you when your parents start to get a little bit older. But I mean, my dad's 79 now, and actually, when he first saw me, he would have been, well, in his 50s, amazingly, just about. So it's quite funny, and there's not really many
just
other...
Just to be clear, when he first saw you live, right?
Yeah, live. Yeah.
Not when he first saw you.
No, I've seen photos. But the thing is, my audience... He's heard good things, yeah. He'd seen me on Partridge. But you see, if I look out as my audience, they do buck the trend slightly. I mean, I don't have an audience which is like tons and tons of 79-year-olds. So it is quite funny having them sort of, you know, gradually growing old, to be fair, very gracefully, but as the show kind of stays roughly the same, and also the audience demographic stays roughly the same, and they're just sort of, it's a sort of slow, it's a type of photography where you see the changing of the seasons.
Long explosion
where you have an audience where gradually there's two people in it that just get whiter and whiter and whiter. in my long explosion photograph.
Have you found any changes in your audience since Partridge and stuff like that? Because obviously you've always had a really loyal fan base, like you've the Fringe and things like that. I've always known you as having people who, like, you'll have people who come along regularly, you know, they come and see each show, all that kind of thing. It's not so much a, oh, here's the marketing campaign for this new one, it's pulled people in or whatever, if you know what I mean. But has that changed much? Do you feel you've got people who shouldn't be there, who should be there?
No, I'm lucky like that. I feel very lucky that, I've had an audience from, like, around about, well, from doing Edinburgh, so sort of 2007, really, I sold a show out, you know, with that's just me on stage. And it is kind of, I do feel lucky that to then those people coming to a second show and a third show. So, I mean, I guess that there's a nice mixture of some people who are younger who have found me along the way at some point, and that could have been from Partridge or, you know, cropping up in TV shows and things like that. But they can come from anywhere, really. But then there's the sort of people who are kind of roughly my age, who, a bit like this podcast where you're telling me about my appearances on podcasts, they tell me about my show that I did in Lancaster, and I'm like, I've got a very vague recollection, and they're telling me that they sort of were on my stage and, you know, holding my drink and stuff like that. But the main thrust of your question is there's no downside, there's no sudden element of a rogue, marauding mass of people who come into my show who come in on the basis of one thing and then I give them something different.
Yeah, that's good news, that's good.
They can be pleasantly surprised, because there's definitely people who've watched me on telly and then they think, oh, we'll watch him because we've heard of him, but have no idea what my act will be.
Yeah.
And that's quite a good thing, because so long as they don't hate it, it means that you get that energy in the room where there's some people who are, you know, seeing something for the first time and finding it fun on that basis.
I always remember when we were at the Fringe having a drink in a courtyard and my mate Ollie was up, who's a sound man. He was up to record my show for me. He was a big fan of yours. He was very excited to meet you. He said hello and instantly poured a pint over you.
He poured a pint over me?
He poured a pint over you, yeah. Instant introduction. It didn't go well.
Did he do it deliberately?
No, it was a mistake. It was in excitement. You were very polite about it.
Sounds like a mistake. Yeah, I always am. That happens three or four times a week. I get pints thrown on me.
Rattling through walking the dog with Emily Dean, the dogs you met along the way were Harry Pippin and Marty. Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about Harry Pippin and Martin?
No, I think when it comes to sort of meeting people over the last sort of 10 years, I struggle to remember all of them. So when we get down to the dogs, I think I can sort of give myself a slight pass there, but I don't remember any of those dogs.
Pippin was a working dog, the guy kept saying, a working dog. You could just say sheepdog. He really liked the term working dog. He kept saying he's a working dog. His mum's a working dog. He's a working dog.
Did Emily Dean sort of identify it as a sheepdog? I mean, I couldn't really tell you whether it was definitely a sheepdog.
I mean, big shock then for you. You identified it as a sheepdog. apparently it was moving in a pattern around you and kind of hoarding the three of you together. So, yeah, great identification from Key there.
That's amazing. Oh, really? It rounded us up?
Yeah.
Was it? Did it come at a good moment? Did you find that me and Emily were sort of drifting apart slightly in the podcast before we found
it? It was the perfect moment. Sheepdog was a star of the show, I think. Well, we'll move on now onto The Moon Underwater.
Sure.
There's a good... You chat about shows that you could have been on but weren't on. Remember any of the ones you would have picked? What would you see yourself as?
Well, I was quite pleased because I picked Ghosts. Ghosts. And I was quite pleased with that because I think that does sound like in my wheelhouse.
The thick of it was in there. Celebrity Bake Off. All things that you'd go, yeah, I reckon Key was in there.
Celebrity Bake Off. Yeah, what else do you think I could have been in?
Oh, it's a tough one, isn't it? I would have said Peep Show, but you were in Peep Show. That's how it all came about.
Yeah, I was in Peep Show. Maybe I've done all the
You've
ones
You've been in Stafflet's Flats now, haven't you? You're in the most recent series of that, so...
Yeah. Would it be impossible for me to crop up in Death in Paradise?
No, I don't think it would. I think it would be a nice surprise. I'd also be happy to see you in Doc Martin.
I love Cornwall.
I'd be very happy to see you popping along in Doc Martin, having a quick interaction with Clunes.
Yeah, that's perfectly possible, isn't it? I'm just trying to think that it's a good game, isn't it?
What else? There's got to be others.
I thought it could have cropped up in Blandings, you know, the P.G. Woodhouse adaptation.
Yeah.
I'd like to crop up in a P.G. Woodhouse adaptation at some point.
Is there anything you've auditioned for that you thought you were a really good fit for and you didn't end up in?
No. I'm bad at auditions, but I did do a really good audition for Sherlock once.
Oh, I could see you in Sherlock.
Yeah, but it didn't go my way. Sometimes it doesn't go your way.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out a very young Tim Key was in The Office, you know?
You know what? I would have loved that. Wouldn't that have been something? I was too young at that point. Oh, well, I wasn't too young. I would have been about 23, but the point was I hadn't started doing it. I think if The Office had been made 10 years later, I might have got myself seen for it.
Yeah.
But I had a friend from university who was in it, and I sometimes see... I saw her recently, actually, and she's... I think she's still, you know, getting the getting the paychecks. I think it's actually quite a lucrative thing to have been in The Office.
Oh, genuinely, yeah. I guess it's constantly played, isn't it?
She used to sit next to Keith.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
My one is always Peaky Blinders.
Oh, 100%.
It would have made sense. And weirdly, I got in the last season, but it clashed with something else, so I didn't
That's
get to
fantastic.
Do it.
Fantastic. What did it clash with?
I was doing a show called Debris in Vancouver for NBC, so I had a big role in that, and it was kind of,
this is amazing.
They weren't having it to say, again, you wouldn't believe the amount I argued, saying, no, we can make it work, I'll fly back. And I had to turn around and go, look, mate, it's one scene. you've got no dialogue, or you've got one line or something. It's like, we're not bending over backwards to...
Well, I'll tell you what, Scroob, I wouldn't mind hearing the line.
I can't remember it.
Can you dig it out?
I don't think I can. Let me have a little look.
We're going to find out. Would we like to hear Scroobius's line?
We're going to find out. I'm going to just check my emails.
Check your email. What, do you think they've emailed again today saying what your line would have been? I can email it to you if you want.
Hang on.
I wonder if you'll find it. Oh, good.
A few things came up there, but it's people who were pitched for me. No.
Shall I see if I can find my... I don't want to... I'm on airplane mode. Let's not mess with that.
I just came off airplane mode and it was mayhem.
I can't come off airplane mode. I can't use my iPad because I'm using that. God, it's amazing, isn't it? We don't have enough devices in our lives. I've always said that.
Yeah, it's completely true. Well, I mean, let's quickly go through... Do you remember the Anatomy of the Lash? You gave basically a run-through of the order of a lash.
Sorry, I've just got Amazon here. One second. Oh. At least we can open it live. We can talk about my Amazon podcast. Hang on.
All over it. Hiya. So Tim Key has gone to get an Amazon order. We're going to open it live.
Hello.
What have we got here?
Well, let's have a look, shall we?
Yeah.
This one feels like a book.
It could be a body language book.
I bet you've read this book.
All right, let's have it. Save the Cat, I haven't. Tell me about Save the Cat. We're now jumping into the My Mate Bought a Toaster podcast, which featured a two-parter with Tim Key.
We're in that territory, aren't we?
Big episode, as it was obviously the unveiling of the new opening music. I'm sure you were very aware.
Acutely. That's why I did it. I'm assuming you've got a new theme tune. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. So what is this? Come on.
Well, this is a book which I think it's been in my... I think I've heard of it at some point. But it's the sort of definitive screenwriter's book, you know.
Oh, really?
How to write a screenplay. And I was out with my old agent, who's now a writer, last night. And she mentioned this book. And she mentioned something along these lines. And I said, oh, have you read any of those books, you know, that tell you how to do it? And she said, well, yeah, I've read Save the Cat. And I said, is it good? And she said, to be honest, it is really good. So
I have to give that a read.
Well, I'm going to give it a go. Oh, I'll tell you what it is. It's because she said that you need to have, if you've got a character who's going to do some bad stuff and you want to show their human side, you make them save a cat early right. proceedings.
Yeah.
I think that's where that phrase comes from. And so, yeah, this is the book about screenwriting. Yeah, well, the other thing I'm going to open, I know what's inside here.
What is it?
This is great, this stuff. Well, I was at London Bridge yesterday and about to board a train, and I wanted a snack, and I've got a bit of a sweet tooth at the moment, so I'm eating a lot of chocolate, and then I found these things, and I've got to say, I went straight on Amazon and ordered 14 of them. And they are fruit crisps, crunchy red apple.
Crunchy red apple fruit crisps.
They're crunchy. The ingredients are apple and RSPO sustainable palm oil. That's bad, isn't it?
It's sustainable.
Oh, yeah. It's palm oil.
It's 62 cows.
It's 62 cows. It's 15 grams. Don't know. I mean, I suppose Emily Fruit Crisps have done quite well out of this podcast, haven't they? If this bit makes the cut.
They've certainly done all right. I mean, they've done all right with your 24-hour turnaround of an order there as well to eat instantly. I need these in my house. I need these in my life.
Well, I get free Amazon because I did that Amazon podcast.
It's a good podcast. Genuinely, yours was the first episode I listened to. I've been invited on there and I've not gone on it yet, purely because of just, oh, I'm not going to have anything interesting. But you do, don't you? Essentially, the nature of it is he goes through your entire Amazon order history and picks out some highlights.
Well, yeah, it is funny because you do, I don't know how many podcasts you go on, but you sort of, it's because I wrote those books.
Yeah.
One was coming out and I thought, oh, I will go on some because it is quite useful to do the odd podcast.
Yeah.
But actually, there's some really nice ones out there. And when it's a bit like Sean Keaveney's one, when I heard about the concept for that, you just think, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it is nice, isn't it? You literally give him your code for your Amazon.
Yeah.
And I actually thought, I didn't know how far back he could go. I thought you could only go back about a month. So when I gave him the code, I logged on the next morning and he says, well, we'll kick off in 2003. And I couldn't believe what was happening. He's got everything.
I love it.
And really, there's so much stuff gets ordered over the years. You don't really have the time or actually the energy to go through it all and vet it. So you just are sort of thinking it all the time. I wonder what the worst thing I've bought on Amazon is.
Exactly. That's it. That's what's scary, is you hand over your details. I remember doing when James Acaster had a show where you just put your iPhone on shuffle or iPod on shuffle and it brings things up. And he was saying he had a problem that people had put together a playlist of credible stuff because they don't want the dog shit to come out.
Really? Wow.
And again, I'd instantly go there with the Amazon thing, thinking, right, where's the bits that don't make me look like a dickhead?
Yeah. You don't want to sit there for an hour talking to Tom Price, wondering when he's going to bring the whip up.
Open with the whip, Tom, for the love of God. I mean, he bought up the Lucy Benjamin Dance Society DVD, but
actually,
it spawned a wonderful story and you had a genuine... I'm not going to make you tell it because people should go and listen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you can't have regrets about buying Lucy Benjamin Dance Society videos.
How can you? The one I do want to talk about, though, because I will have them on my list as well, and I could only order them in packs of like five, is the old Humane Mousetrap. So
looking at one now.
Yeah, I've got one behind my sofa as we speak because it sounds like I did similar to you. I popped a Humane Mousetrap down. Mm. I went up to bed and I thought I heard a noise, and it's in the kitchen. I thought, I can't really have heard that. I'm just being paranoid. I went down, There it was. I take it out, I release it. How far do you think I went, Tim?
I think you went, well, obviously not far enough, but I think you went about 30 metres.
Yeah, I went more than that, but as you say, not far enough, because a week later, or maybe a few days later, old Mousy Boy's found his way home, and he's eating my protein powder. So, if anything...
He ate your protein powder.
If anything, he's going to be harder to get rid of this time.
Well, definitely. Well, he's on the weights. If he keeps eating that, it'll be the same shape as you. Then you're in trouble.
I won't go to a sauna with him, I tell you that.
Certainly not in Italy.
I can't handle that moment. So how was your mouse experience?
They're funny, aren't they?
And is it continued? Because it can be just you can't shake the buggers.
No, once you've shaken, I shook them. I mean, I got rid of a few. And it was in lockdown. So I don't know whether you could have pest control. I don't think you, but maybe you could. Maybe that was essential. I certainly didn't have pest control, let's put it that way. And I went humane just because, I mean, they're poor little mice, aren't they? But I think my main reason for going humane is I didn't love the idea of having to sort of return to a trap and there's this mouse in it. I used to live with a squashed mouse. I used to live with a flatmate and he just took care of business on that side of things. And actually, to be fair to the guy, and this is not a criticism, he took a sort of a relish in it. But no, I'm kind of humane mousetrap, and I think there is a little bit of more of strategy in there. It feels like, have you ever had a moment where you've got the humane mousetrap set up, and then, hang on, is that a funny noise?
It's rain.
Is it really?
I'm suddenly in an absolute, honestly, I've never seen anything like it. It's rain like I've never seen outside my house. That's what you're hearing. Whereas bright sun in London.
I've never seen the likes of this sun. We really are chalk and cheese, aren't we?
We really are.
Well, the mouse, I had a humane mousetrap at one point, just centre of lounge. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sat on the sofa, I'm watching my Tiger King, and just mouse, just walking around, just doing anything but going into this humane mouse. You can't make them go in, can you?
No, truly an evening of cat and mouse. It would seem with your Tiger King.
The cat is on the telly. Yep.
Mouse.
Big cat.
Avoiding the humane.
I know.
Humane trap.
I eventually caught one. There is a satisfaction of you're right. The it's like, you know, all
the adrenaline. The adrenaline is crazy.
It's adrenaline.
Genuinely, I've caught three now, and the adrenaline. I thought I'd get used to it. The adrenaline every time. Like, oh my god, there's a live mouse in there. Oh my god,
there's a live mouse. Yeah, but it's when you hear that, it's just such a small noise. Just goes, and you just do the hem and fist pump, and you're like, we're in. It's one of those noises, like in sport. You know that all noises in sport just have their own beauty, like a leather against willow in cricket, or the sound of a tennis ball being struck.
Yeah.
And now I think this one goes into my top 10, the sound of the humane mousetrap door pinging closed.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's a classic. And I found, because my mouse, or mice, or mouses, got cleverer. So
they do.
I learned.
And bolder.
And bolder, yeah. I'd put some kind of crumb type thing in there, or some bread or whatever else, that they'd manage to get in and get out without getting caught. So I learned that you have to put something like a peanut butter that they have to spend some time in there eating. They can't just grab and go. And that
That's a good idea.
The key to keep them in there.
Mine was allergic, so I had to use biscuits.
Yeah, that's a good choice. You don't want him going into anaphylactic shock.
No, because he doesn't. When he comes out of his mouse hole, he doesn't bring his pen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I'm probably going to ease up on the going through the podcast now, because I do want to talk to you about serious stuff as well. But I do want you to know that I've got a page worth of notes on Moon Under the Water. I've got the anatomy of the lash. I've got the pre-lash, which is optional as brutal pre-lash. The sly lash, the lash, the side lash, the post lash, the moonlight lash, and then a couple of Stellas in bed to to get you off to sleep.
The Stellas in bed. Did I say Stellas in bed?
Yeah. You threw that in there as an option.
Jesus Christ.
Do you remember any of the drinks you chose? Because let's face it, it's off menu for drinks, isn't it? It's off drinks menu. They could have called it off drinks menu.
Yeah, I do remember a couple of the drinks, actually, and one of them I would say is definitely my dad's homebrew.
Yep, Bill Key's homebrew,
and I think probably an amaretto might be in there as well.
Amaretto was in there, and I think they brought you an amaretto, if I remember rightly, on stage, because it was a live one.
It's an interesting show. I mean, I've heard a couple of them. Actually, I need to listen to a couple more, because they had Izzy City on, and I thought I'd listen to that before I went on. Was it before? Yeah, because with some of them, it's quite useful to, like, just work out what's going on a bit.
Yeah.
And some of them I try not to listen to at all. Like, off menu, I tried not to listen to, really, and then listen to it loads afterwards.
Yeah.
But with...
You'd not listen to my episode, but, yeah, loads, other than...
Yeah, yeah.
Other than that, loads.
Yeah, but I'd be going backwards.
Reverse order.
Yeah. If I started at the top and skipped the ones that I wasn't that interested in, then you're in trouble. But yeah, I listened to them interviewing Izzy City, and it's really just the sort of deterioration, particularly of John, that you're listening to. I mean, he does half of it, and then they have a break, and then he does the second half, and even listening back to the, but then in the edit, it's all scrunched up a little bit.
Yeah.
So you just listen to it for an hour, and it's all normal. And obviously, you're listening to it in the daytime, so you're just not drunk either. And so it gets to about 40 minutes, and you've got a very drunk host. And by drunk, I mean literally slurring his words.
Well, I mean, speaking of drunk hosts, before we go on to No More Jockeys, I will just quickly do my recap of the Richard Herring podcast. And that was essentially just him spending an hour trying to convince you to rebrand to Tim Key.
Yeah.
Rather than Tim Key.
Yeah.
Other than that, all the classics, Partridge, Russia, Footlights.
Yeah. Tim
Key rebrand.
Yeah.
Tell me about No More Jockeys, mate. You know I'm a huge fan, and it's wonderful. And as said, when I've watched the live ones, there has been some deterioration from Mr. Horn as he's got more and more drunk. He's normally the one that becomes a fucking drunken mess. In the edit, you never notice that. You tune into a live one, and there is hours of Horn just acting up.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Because I said, I've messaged you and Alex about it, I think. During that first lockdown, that whole year of lockdowns, I thought it was the best TV show. I thought it was better than Taskmaster. All the work Alex puts into Taskmaster, fuck that off. No More Jockeys, get drunk. You, him, Mark Watson playing a word game.
We were very lucky to have it as well from our side. Yeah. It was definitely my a highlight of lockdown. We did it about 2002, I think. Me and Mark were just naming... I think we were just somehow naming famous people. And I think I said to him, how many famous people do you think you could name? And he said, 1,000? How about you? And I said, I don't know, 5,000 probably. And he said, well, go on then. And then I started naming 5,000 famous people. So I'd go, well, you know, Thatcher... Charles Dickens. And then I think I sort of went Bosnich, Mark Bosnich, Schmeichel, Grizovich, Grobbelaar. And then he goes, oh, okay, no more goalkeepers. And that was how it started.
That's where it was born. I love it.
Yeah, just, I'd name a few more people, and then he told me I couldn't name them anymore. And then just gradually from there, this might be quite interesting, actually.
Mm.
And then we started playing alternatively and knocking out categories. So, yeah, in case anyone is not familiar with the game, that's how it works. You just have to name a famous person and remove a category that they would fall into. But not always, like, their job. It can be Eartha Kitt, no more people who... I'm not very good at this game, but... no more people whose name is two nouns with an extra letter on each one, accidentally.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. No more job gloves, etc.
Yeah, exactly. So then we just kind of used to play it, you know, when me and Mark were just kind of starting out and driving around doing shows and things. And then me, Mark and Alex would play it, and then we'd go on tour and stuff, and it would be our kind of version of I Spy. And then we filmed a few, like about 2009, I think, but then just put it down for another 13 years. And then in lockdown, Mark said, maybe we should try and do No More Jockeys. And we did it. weirdly, Zoom was very important to it because I think we'd thought about pitching it as a radio show, but could never really work out exactly how that would be. But what we didn't, everything came together at once because we were now a Zoom show with all three of our faces all visible at all times.
Yeah.
And it was now a sort of drunken show, which had never been before.
Yeah.
And then we had an editor, Hymen, who would just got it immediately and worked out how to do it. And I think the first time we did it, the edit he sent back would be going into full screen each time one of us spoke.
Yeah.
And we got rid of that straight away and made it, because like you say with Horn, you just want it to be, you want to be able to observe everything that's going on. Just look at all three and think, what the fuck is Mark thinking here?
Yeah.
And Horn will be sort of, fiddling with some paint or something in his little square. And Mark will be trying to think of who he can possibly say. And it's all, it all kind of works as a fully formed thing straight away when Hymen sent this thing back. We had this 25-minute thing, which I remember watching it back and thinking, well, I find this quite funny, actually.
Yeah. Or that's the beauty of it. It rests on the friendship of you three as well. Obviously, the format is great, but the fact that you three know each other so and make each other laugh so much, it's not like there's Tim's the funny one and Alex. Like, you all crack each other up, and that makes it a joy to get through and sit through.
But that's all, like, that's kind of, yeah, that's such a big part, I think, of certainly for me when I'm socialising. It's a really fun thing and a real kind of buzz to make someone laugh.
Yeah.
And actually, I really find with both of those, weirdly, the way they fit into my life, I really find it very enjoyable to make either of them laugh.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I suppose in a way, particularly Horn, only because Horn's persona is deadpan. And so it feels so fun to just suddenly see Horn, in spite of himself, laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and always about, there's never anything at all, intellectual or intelligent about it. It's just, just managing to unsteady him by a moment of complete stupidity, almost always. Yeah, it's a really fun way to spend time. And also, a lot of people, obviously, now that we're back in the real world, come up to us separately and say it was really good to have it. In, like you just said, in lockdown, it was really nice to have that thing to look forward to. But we had, obviously, the same thing from our end, where you just don't have anything in your diary.
Yeah.
And the stuff you do have in your diary is stuff where, like, someone said, oh, should we do a quiz? And you're like, okay, fine. So to have something which was like felt constructive and creative and really social in your diary was a really fun thing.
It's amazing the things that cannot appeal even when you've got a completely empty diary. I had numerous Zoom quiz invites and stuff like that where I've been sitting around going, I just want to do something. So I was like, oh, we're doing a Zoom quiz on Friday.
Not that.
Nah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. But, well, speaking of lockdown and your boredom, let's finally get round to your books, because they're bloody beautiful, man. The design of them and everything, they feel like religious texts. I don't know if you, I was a little Catholic schoolboy and we'd go to church on the regular, and this feels like the books you'd have at church and so on and so forth. Obviously the content is very different, but how did they come about, and tell me a bit about the creation of them.
Yeah, in the first week of lockdown I started writing some poems about lockdown. And it was a bit of a kind of unknown thing of how you deal with a lockdown as a creative person, as a person as well. But lockdown was a bit of a handful. And I remember writing a couple of poems and just not knowing whether you should be doing that, basically.
Yeah.
Because that first week of lockdown, there's literally footage from Italy of which you sort of assume, oh, that's the next bit in our lockdown, where it's going mad. I mean, it's like people are, people are dying from this virus.
Yeah.
And so you don't know whether it's in poor taste to even, pick up your pen. And I sort of was writing, obviously wasn't writing about COVID, but was writing about lockdown. And then it got to about a week in and I wasn't really sure whether I should be doing that. And then I was posting them on Instagram, and then I posted one and it got a good reaction. I thought, okay, that gave me a kind of spur. And after that, I just posted every day, and I really liked doing it. And it was about lockdown. It was about this mad thing that everyone was suddenly having to do, as this sort of shared experience. And then I started writing dialogues after I spoke to my parents on Zoom one day. It was such a stupid conversation that I wrote it down.
Yeah.
And then I wrote another couple of conversations down. And they were sort of a mixture, hybrid of real, what actually happened in the conversation, but with a little bit of creative license. Mm. And after about a month, I had like 30 pages of something. I didn't know what it was. And then meanwhile, I'd made a couple of things with a friend called Emily Juniper, who's the designer
who did the cards as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And we'd always wanted to work with each other. And she made a couple of posters for my shows, and then she made an amazing play script of one of the shows with all of the words beautifully illustrated. Wow. Yeah, and then we made a pack of playing cards, would have been about a year before the lockdown. And then I just sent her, you know, 30 pages of stuff and said, do you think this can be a book? And she's in her bit of the country, in Falmouth, also, obviously, like everyone, just in this kind of space of bereftness where everything you're doing is kind of disrupted or taken away from you. And so she came back, I think almost before I sent the email, really, saying, I definitely will do this, yeah. And that was it.
100%, let's do this.
I know, so then I'd just send the stuff and she'd send it back, and gradually she, you know, turned it into a kind of a design and a kind of flavour that was like no other book I'd ever seen. And that spurred me on to go, okay, this is definitely now going to be a book. And then as the stuff was coming through, she was enjoying the stuff, so she was thinking, good, I need to like design this really well. And so, yeah, it was the most kind of very even and enjoyable and also really useful collaboration that probably either of us have ever done, because it was just so kind of, it certainly gave me a lot of direction and a lot of purpose in that first lockdown.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll start to wrap things up as we're coming up to an hour and I want to get out in this rain.
Exactly.
Speaking of coming out of it, I've got a really weird, I've literally written down the question of what do you want?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean it, because what are your goals? Because you've touched upon writing screenplays and scripts. You've obviously been doing comedy for a long time, and the acting is going amazingly from what I can see. You're popping up in so many good things. Witchfinder, which we've not even touched upon. Part of that is because it's a medieval thing based in Essex. And have you seen my face and heard my voice? Yeah. Unbelievable that I didn't get a phone call. But yeah. what are your goals kind of going forward?
Well, I mean, I really want to carry on doing the stuff I'm doing. So I want to do more live stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying that. I want to do more radio stuff. I've got a radio show which we've done like a few series, and now we've got I mean, it's a bit Partridge really, but it's slightly give me another series. I think they've sort of given me series, stop giving me series for a bit, and I want them to start giving me series again, because I really love making that. So I'd like to do that stuff that I'm already doing, and I'd like to write another book in the same kind of way, but yeah, hopefully not about another lockdown. And then I'd love to write and be in something, you know, on screen.
Mm.
It's easier said than done, you know. And I there's no real hurry, but I'm kind of constantly, you know, you're probably the same as me. You carry a notepad and you kind of think, some things come to you and you kind of jot them down and stuff like that. But then coming from the other direction where you go, what could I write a film about, or, you know. So all of those things have just been constantly being mulled over for the last 10 years. And so at some point, hopefully, one or other of a TV thing or a film thing, someone will say, you can make that, and I'll do that. But I mean, other than that, I'm kind of pretty happy with creatively what I'm up to. I'm kind of quite fortunate that I can make something and then people can, you know, have an audience who can watch it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I was going to say, the film and TV thing, it's so weird because it's such a slow process that's out of your control. So yeah, it can be a really weird transition. And I'm going through it with a few scripts I've had in development that have hit walls and stuff like that. Going from the music, which I could completely do off my own back, I put it out, it's there, the podcast, all these things that you're in control of, to suddenly be in an industry where you have to wait for someone's permission as such is really odd. You can't just go, oh, let's make this then, because they're like, well, no, we need to tell you that we're going to... It's a weird transition.
It is a weird transition, and that's the equation, basically, is... And that's why I feel very grateful that I have an audience, and I can just, if I want, put a show on in Angel or, you know, somewhere in London in front of 80 people, and I could do that next week and tweet about it, and they put it on their mailing list, and I have these people, and they can come and watch the show. Yeah. So that'll always be a very attractive thing, purely in terms of not going out of your mind, because even in the lockdown, I remember that first week or two looking at, you know, a blank piece of paper and thinking, do I try and write a sitcom? And meanwhile, I'm sort of just scribbling down these things that are coming to me quite naturally, these poems and things, and thinking after about 2 or 3 weeks, this could be something. And I kind of feel very grateful that I didn't accidentally go the other way. And of course, it could have been really useful, because I could have maybe written something that got made. I hate the idea, looking back, that I didn't make the book because I tried to make something that didn't actually accrue into anything in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the book, because that's another avenue I definitely have with because I have Emily, and she and I can get it done. And she does everything. She publishes the book. So we can just do that. Psychologically, it works for me that if I know I'm writing something, and as the ink is coming from the pen, I know that the word that I'm writing down at some point later that year or the following year, someone's going to read that.
Yeah.
It makes a slight psychological difference to me.
Yeah.
And the same as if it's a live thing, I know as I'm writing it down that I'll be performing that to someone. Whereas it's the same as you. If there's like a film script, which I've got a couple in the past where I've written a film script, and then you look back on it and think, that's mad that I spent all that time writing that script.
And nothing's ever happened to it, yeah.
It's like making about sort of, you know, 45 kilos of risotto and not feeding it to anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Hearing you say all that, I went almost the opposite in the lockdown. I worked on a load of different scripts, and it was a weird thing of kind of, there's at least one that I finished, adored, but then I moved on to the next one, and now that's the one I'm trying to push. I'm like, oh, right, how about that? Oh, I spent a year on that one. I spent the whole first year on that, but now I'm focused on this next one.
But that is a really useful way of working, I think. If you can, I think a worse way is if you did that first one and then you had the idea for the second one and decided not to pursue it because you wanted to just focus on that first one.
Yeah, it was the advantage, you said, of the lockdown. The first script I ever wrote, it went into development, and the people at Warp had to take me aside and say, work on other stuff, mate. Because this could take 8 years to get made. Because I was exactly that. I was like, I've written it.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the thing. This is the piece. But yeah, it's fucking weird, isn't it?
yeah. But it's good to have other outlets. And I mean, the flip side of looking at it is I've got friends who are really focused and have sort of shut down other areas, like shut down doing live stuff and acting and things. And I have friends who are like, well... Like, specifically, Stefan Goloszewski, who I used to be in a sketch group with, who now, since then, has written Him and Her, and then he wrote Mum. Right.
Like, he's amazing.
He's insane. But he's got a different sort of approach where... And he's very good live comedian and stuff, but just eschewed all of that and just focused and just tries to get as good as possible at writing stuff. And the results are that every 2 or 3 years, he'll just put something out and you'll go, oh, yeah, there are definitely advantages to focusing.
Churns out a masterpiece every couple of years. Oh, okay, basically, I get that. Yeah. Well, before we finish, I just want to know, what is your cinema routine? Have you got a cinema routine? Are you a fan of quiet cinemas? Are you a daytime cinema guy? Are you a lot of food and drink? Tell me.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not a lot of food and drink. I went to my last cinema guy was last Friday.
What'd you say?
Actually, I saw The Batman.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
It was okay. I found it quite humorless.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Actually, did I enjoy it? I don't think it was good enough.
Okay, I like it. I like your honesty.
I like the one with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, I haven't seen it since, so I don't know how it stands up. But I kind of like, I don't think I'm a Batman aficionado, but I do think it's quite good when it's quite, I like it when it's quite playful, like a bit playful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This wasn't very playful.
No, it wasn't playful at all. It was very sad.
Yeah. So I think this was how, it really reminded me of how I used to go to the cinema, I think. I used to really love that. To watch a film in the day is kind of, it's a fringe benefit.
I can't remember which podcast it was, but one of the podcasts you mentioned a daytime cinema thing. Again, exactly. As any kind of entertainer, you get that advantage. Except in the holidays.
You do, and I don't use it because I might have said this on the same podcast that you're talking about, but I think it's that thing of I'm getting a bit better at it now, but in terms of like writing, I kind of set aside a whole day, and the day just gradually gets stolen away from me, and it becomes 2, and then it's 5, and then it's 7, and you're like, oh dear. And I actually think a better way of doing it is to allocate a morning or allocate 3 hours and have other stuff around it that you're really looking forward to. And then
that's exactly how I do it. My biggest problem is how much I reward myself. I'll get an hour's writing done and I'll be like, right, off to the cinema then, or get a takeaway. Well done. You've done very well. I've done fuck all, done an hour's work, but yeah.
I think I'm pretty good to myself rewards wise.
Minor achievements.
Yeah. But yeah, this cinema trip was walk past cinema, look at times, realise one's absolutely about to start, go into cinema, no coffee, no sweeties.
Unbelievable. This is heartbreaking. No wonder you didn't enjoy it.
Well, I just had a coffee and just had loads of sweeties.
All right, and then
sit in there, and I think I enjoyed everything about it, apart from the film, really. I mean, it was nice cinema.
It's warm
and you're not on your phone.
Yeah.
And you can sort of, you know, have a good old think and try and work out who the actors are. I'm not really good at actors, so I'm just sort of looking at the actors and thinking, fair play to these guys.
I love the idea of you just daring, trying to figure out who's who. Where do I know him from?
Squinting. Yeah, walking down the steps and standing right in front of the screen with my hands on my hips, looking at the penguin.
Looking up and down.
Who the fuck are you?
I know him. I definitely know his eyes.
Yeah, the eyes I know. I don't know his shape.
And shape's a big thing to you. So what should people know about? The books, as said, are available. Have you just done your Soho show?
Just finished the Soho show. And then we're going to go, do it at the Pleasance in Caledonian Road.
Lovely.
And then we might add some more. Maybe in a month's time there'll be more information on that.
Yeah,
but certainly the books are very much available. They're called Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush and He Used Thought as a Wife. I think you just can Google them and then you'll find they're in bookshops.
They're available all over the place. Do you enjoy touring?
Because
it's only just occurred to me. I seem to notice you doing a lot of here's a run of shows at one venue.
Yeah,
is that more your thing, or do you do a lot more kind of?
No, what happened was, with this show, the show is much like the book. It's really kind of it's lockdown,
the same as the book.
I mean, it's a fun show. I mean, it's kind of quite expansive. It's kind of quite expansive and enjoyable. But the thing was, I never knew how much people would be open to listening to that, to talking about the lockdown. And as I've gone along doing it, I've only ever done stuff about lockdown since the lockdown started, and it's been really fun. And it's kind of tonally, it's not sad. And like I say, there's nothing about COVID. It's all about that mad period of our lives, really, about those crazy rules that were suddenly there and all of that, and you know, this peculiar situation everyone was in. But I didn't know as I was doing it how long it would be relevant to listen to and whether or not I'd actually just stop doing it at some point. So it felt a bit odd to say I'm going to do a tour of this in 1 year's time.
Yeah.
So the reason I've done these shorter things is because I basically got offered Soho Theatre, where they said, in 3 weeks' time, do you want to do a 3-week run? And that's easier in my mind to manage, because I'm doing shows at the time thinking, well, this is going absolutely fine, so it will be fine still in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
But now I think I'm more of a mind that actually this will be okay in a year.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll do other stuff and then come back and do it. And so I'd like to tour it, but it's just all, you know, a bit of organisation and stuff. You basically, these, not these days, probably always, you have to book a tour quite far out.
Yeah.
And that's not, yeah, it's not so you sell the tickets. It's just because the venues don't have availability in, if you say, can I come and do your theatre next Sunday?
No, they sort of go, we've got plans.
Not really. Yes, we've got sort of Rob Beckett and the Manic Street Preachers next week. So you kind of have to, you know, organise it and map it all out a little further ahead. But yeah, I do like doing little runs and things. But yeah, it's not in place of touring. It's just that was why it was kind of, that's how that sort of came about, that it kind of became a more Londonised thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is there plans to do any more No More Jockeys, or are you all allowed out the house now? So fuck that.
It is more difficult to coordinate and stuff. I mean, literally, we would just meet on Thursday nights at 9:30.
Yeah,
and then as the thing unlocked, me and Mark would meet in real life at 7 and have a few drinks, and then amazingly, I'd then bomb off on my bike and see him half an hour later online. But yeah, we're well into the guts of a new series.
Love
so
it.
Hopefully that will come out, and you can add it to your show notes if it's about to come out. I'll let you know.
Yeah, perfect.
It's not imminent, but it's around the corner.
It's visible.
Yeah,
you can see it shape.
I can totally see its shape, and I love it. Well, I don't love its shape. I mean, in terms of how the results are going, but I love its general shape. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and overcoming the technical difficulties. It's been a pleasure as ever, sir.
Thank you, Scroobius. Hopefully I'll see you IRL soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Tim Key. I hope you enjoyed that chat. I know it was a weird one. Apologies to anyone who found that too weird. I just spent most of the time making Tim feel awkward trying to remember previous podcast appearances. But we've got to make fun for ourselves in these stressful times. Thank you for tuning in. I'll be back next week. As said, Tim has two books out. I can't recommend them enough. Here We Go Round the Mulberry Bush and A Used Thought as a Wife. They are brilliant. He is brilliant. Go and watch No More Jockeys. Just check everything that Tim does out. He's wonderful. Oh, and if you've not watched The Witchfinder on iPlayer yet, get through that. It's fantastic. Oh, did you hear the noise that my throat made then? I don't know if it picked up on mic, but it made a really weird noise. So I think that means it's time to go. I'll be back next week. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.